So I wonder, what's going to change for you, or what has changed for you recently? We could do a quick poll in the church. Who's starting? Oh, they're not going to listen to me because they've all got stuff. Who's starting a new school this week? Anyone? Sam's got a new school. Isaac, you starting a new school? Annabelle's got a new school. Who's starting a new school year? Everybody that's at school, yes, including maybe the teachers as well. Is that right? They're all starting a new school year. Who's leaving school? Where's Aaron? Yes. Sorry, I won't make you speak, Aaron, don't worry. Who's got a child that's leaving home? It's like a lot of sad parents just put their hand up there. Sorry, don't cry on me. Who's started or might start a new job? Harv, you're going to do them. We might find a bit about that later. The questions can go on and on, can't they, about who's doing this? And the reality is that all of us will have experienced or have experienced or will experience some kind of change in life. Some is small, some is massive, but all life-changing to some degree. In our summer series, this is the last one we've seen through the book of Exodus in the life of Moses, that there's been change for him and the Israelites. But we're also reminded that through the change, that we have a God who. And we're going to find out three things about this God who. We have a God who keeps his promises. We have a God who defines his people. And we have a God who shows the way. A God who keeps his promises. Back in Exodus chapter 3, way back near the start of the summer at the burning bush, God says this to Moses. He says, I will be with you, and this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will serve God on this mountain. And we've already seen through summer that God's fulfilled the first bit of the promise. Using Moses, he's brought the Israelites out of Egypt. Now we see right at the start of chapter 19 that God has fulfilled the second part of this promise that he said. Mount Sinai, where Moses and the Israelites are now, is the place referred to in chapter 3 as this mountain. If you were reading Exodus for the first time, and you'd no idea what was about to happen, there's no way that you would have imagined the Israelites would have got this far. When we saw Moses back in chapter 3, he didn't even want to go to the Israelites and speak to them, never mind go to Pharaoh, the ruler of Egypt, and say, release God's people. But he did. And God brought the people out of slavery and into freedom. And God promised to bring the people to the mountain where they can worship and serve him. And now they're here. A promise fulfilled by God, who said he would do what he did. But God didn't bring his people out of slavery to just be another ordinary bunch of people, or a tribe or a nation. No, as well as bringing them out of slavery, God also gives them a status. We were in London a few weeks ago doing all the touristy things, and we went to see Buckingham Palace. It's up there. I didn't see the Queen. That's not actually the Queen, in case you're wondering. That's a waxwork. In case you thought, oh, Brian was just having a right good old natter with Elizabeth, as I like to call her. The Queen wasn't at home the day we went to Buckingham Palace. And even if she was in, we wouldn't have just been able to wander in and sit with the royal family and say, well, we're one of you now, because we're in your house. Now, to be part of the royal family, you either need to be born into it, or you need to be brought into the royal family. As the Israelites arrived at Mount Sinai, God says this in Exodus chapter 19, verses 4 to 6. He says to them, you yourselves have seen what I did to Egypt, and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all nations you will be my treasured possession. Although the whole earth is mine, You will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. God tells us here who his people are going to be. They're going to be a holy nation. God is setting them apart from the whole world to be his people. God reminds them actually that the whole world belongs to God. Don't forget that. But he says, but you Israelites, you're going to be different. You're going to stand out in this world because you are mine. How are they going to stand out? Well, the first 17 verses or so of chapter 20 tell us a little bit. Don't worry, we're not going through that verse by verse. But again, thanks to God, it's not down to the Israelites that are going to figure out what to do. God instructs the Israelites and makes a way for them to fulfill his command. So we have a God who shows the way. When we were in London, we did a lot of walking. And there was one particular street where I thought, this is just mental. I think it was the corner of Regent Street and Oxford Street, and there were people going this way and that way. There were people going into the tube station as people were trying to get out. There was cars and buses and taxis and cyclists. There were people standing still trying to figure out where they were. And there were people that just looked bewildered by the whole scenario. And it just about worked. We just about got through because people generally followed the rules. When the green man was on, we crossed the road. When the red man was on, we waited. It was the same for the cyclists and the buses. Green for go, red for stop. I can only imagine the chaos there would have been if someone had switched the lights off and shouted every man for themselves. When God said, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation, he didn't just say it and leave the people to do what they wanted or to figure it out by themselves. He gave them guidance. The Ten Commandments, as they're generally known. These commandments are in chapter 20. You can read them when you get home. Or I could do a quiz and ask you to tell me them all in reverse order, but we'd be here for a while. But the commandments summed up how the Israelites were to relate to people. Well, they summed up first how they were to relate to God, and then they summed up how they were to relate to others, to each other and other nations. Through them, wholehearted devotion to God is expected, and wholehearted care for others is expected too. But remember that the commandments and the rules, they're not a means of salvation. It's not if you follow these rules, then you'll be saved. And if you don't follow these rules, then you won't be saved. How do we know this? Because God's already rescued, hasn't he? One of the verses Aaron read out, Exodus chapter 20, verse 2, he says this. He says, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. Before he's given any rules, he says, I'm the one who saved you. God acted, God saved, God rescued, and then God said, in light of what I have done for you, live like this so others will see who I am. And while the story of Moses is incredible, it'd make a great film, it can seem detached from us sometimes, can't it? How can these ancient events at Mount Sinai apply to us in Carlisle in 2019? But the God that fulfilled his promise to Moses, the God who defined his people, and the God who shows the way is still the same God today. So we've got a God who keeps his promises today. In the book of Exodus, God promised to bring his people out of slavery, and he did. For us, mercifully for us today, we are generally not suffering the same kind of physical enslavement that the Israelites were, or as indeed many thousands of people across the world are. But we can still be slaves in 2019 Carlisle. We're still controlled by something. The Israelites were held captive by the crushing power of Pharaoh, today, we all are, or have been, or have the potential to be held captive by a crushing power. It could be the crushing power of malice, or hatred, or greed, or envy, or selfishness, or doubt, or gossip, or pride, or whatever it is. When it's not godly, when it doesn't reflect Christ, then it has you as its slave. But the good news is you don't need to be ruled by that master anymore. The same God who freed the Israelites and brought them to Mount Sinai is the same God who frees us today. As we look to take communion later, consider those attitudes and actions that seem to always hold you captive, that seem to drag you back, and know this morning that they don't need to anymore. For us, it is Jesus Christ who's made the way for us to be free. Jesus saw and he sees the things that enslave you. But the Bible tells us that we've been made holy through the sacrifice of the body of Jesus Christ, once and for all. And once you're set free, you're to remain free. Galatians tells us, "For it is for freedom that Christ has set us free." And he says, "Stand firm then and do not let yourselves be burdened again by a yoke of slavery." The Israelites were called, You are free, we are free, because Jesus has set us free. We've got a God who defines his people today as well. We said that the Israelites in Exodus 19 were called to be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation, and the same is true of us today. When you fully rely on God's grace to make you holy and to set you free, then life changes. I heard about the cow that was wandering the streets of Kingstown a few weeks ago. A cow had got out of the building it was being kept in, but it was wandering aimlessly about the surrounding suburbs, aimless and alone. When Christ sets you free, you're not left to wander about alone. Instead, you're called to be part of something bigger and something better. In the book of 1 Peter, it says, and it's on the screen, "But you are a chosen people." This is for you and me. It's not just for who Peter was writing to. "You are a chosen people, a holy nation. You are God's special possession, so that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness to his wonderful light." Strikingly similar language to that he used with the Israelites, isn't it? The whole world belongs to God. But you, today, you are, or you can be, part of a chosen people, a holy nation. You are, and you can be, God's special possession, under God's extraordinary care and astounding grace and mercy. So as we look to communion, remember that we're part of a new nation, a new family, a holy people. And as Peter says, declare the praises of the one who made it possible. We just say, "Thank you, Jesus." And then we have a God who shows the way today as well. John chapter 14, these words of Jesus are recorded. Jesus says, "If you love me, keep my commands. And I will ask the Father, and he will give you another advocate to help you and be with you forever. In the Spirit of truth." The challenge laid down to the Israelites back in Exodus was, "If you love me, follow my commands." The challenge laid down to us by Christ today is, "If you love me, follow my commands." Christ says, "Let your whole life be governed by your wholehearted devotion to me and to others." And our selfless devotion to God and others is possible only because of his selfless devotion to us. God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. So this means that we love because he first loved us. So today, know that you are in the presence of a God who keeps his promises. Know that you are in the presence of a God who's made you his treasured possession. And know that this was made possible by Christ, who gave himself for us to make us a pure people who belong to him and are eager to do good. Before we take communion together, I've asked the band to lead us in a song of worship to bring our minds to... Yeah, you come out now. I'll keep talking when you come up. To bring our minds to reflect on and praise the God who makes us his people. It's one called Before the Throne of God Above, I Have a Strong, a Perfect Plea, a Great High Priest whose name is Love. So please do stand and sing, and then we'll take communion together.